admonition that that he tells us not to do it because we have to do it, and there again, I've seen men who have been chosen by the church, which put into a lot. In fact, I think of in a situation years ago where we attended an ordination and there were seven men in the lot. I knew all these men. I knew them well. And I had, we were having revival meetings in our church. It wasn't in South Carolina, by the way, so I don't think you can figure this one out without some extra information. But I knew these men well, and I had an evangelist with me. We were having revival meetings, and it was on a Sunday afternoon. And I was young. I was just young in the ministry, and I looked at these seven men, and there was only two that didn't smoke or drink, abusively. Now, I grew up in a community where this was pretty prevalent. But when it came to choosing a leader of a church, and I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, how can this be? So I, after we left, and in fact that the lot was called and they made their choice, and the man that was chosen. On the way home, I asked the evangelist, which was an older man. Now I'm like that, but this is the answer here. I said, "What do you make of that?" I said, "Those men. There were two men on that row that I would have thought qualified by the scriptural qualification." And he said that a lot of times God will allow the worst of the seven to come out of that group to lead that church. And that's exactly what happened. That church fell, it just wasted away. That man, I was friends with him. And we had many conversations about ministry and about being a preacher. He couldn't preach. He absolutely could not preach. He did not have a gift in standing in front of the church. And if I was to demonstrate, I would be embarrassed to demonstrate how he carried himself in front of a group. I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm just stating facts with you. And it finally just, the church just dwindled away. There's this little small group there now, but it's not at all like it. There's no one there that was there at that time. So what I'm saying then is that the responsibility, as I said this morning, lies upon the church to choose people that are qualified. And don't be reckless about it. And I know that a lot of times we would rather not be a part of that. I've had situations where you have people who will say, "Well, I know that God gave me a name, and that name never came up." That's kind of complicated too, isn't it? I mean, here you pray, and I want you to. You need to. It's important that you do that. Seeking the leadership of the Holy Spirit and choosing someone. Now, the Bible talks clearly to us about being in unity, but I'm also aware of the fact that I cannot say that we have to have a unanimous situation where you just choose one person. That's there again. I've had two situations where it was unanimously chosen and they both got overrun with pride. So you got a negative everywhere you go. I mean, it It sounds good to say that if the church is so unified that they select one person, but then that person has to deal with some maturity and growing up and getting with it takes a lot of humility then. And I find that's a negative. Now, Proverbs, there are two places that it talks about how the lot does things. And it's I use it often in these type of settings. The one says, I think it's Proverbs 16:16, I believe it is, where it says that the lot is cast into the hands. How is it now? Anyhow, the decision is the Lord's, is the content. Proverbs 18:18 says that the lot will cease contentions. I like that one because it's true. The lot ceases contention. We've had a lot less debate in the areas where the lot is used by the choosing. Then, as a church, for some reason, we seem to understand more the fact that now it's in God's hands, and we'll let Him do the choosing. And I've seen a lot less contentions when it comes to some of that. All right. Back to 1 Timothy 3, chapter 2. We have a lot of work to do to get out of here on time. So we have a lot of territory to do. And I'll try to be brief in all of what I'm doing. Now, you notice there are a list of things that are given here in qualification. I said this morning that, honestly, I wouldn't expect anyone to be perfect in all of these qualifications because it's a pretty high standard. Now, I'm going to read them, and I'm going to make some comparisons here, and then I'm going to mix a little bit in as we go, so it's not... I'm not going to do three sermons here tonight, but just sort of mix together as we can. So we talked about being blameless this morning, and we talked about being the husband of one wife. A little bit later, when I get down to, let me see, I think I'll do it right now. The husband of one wife, then there's vigilant, sober, good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, no striker, not a lover of money, not a brawler, not covetous, manages his family well. Then Titus 1:6, it gives something like this, husband, blameless, again, it starts over the same list, husband of one wife, believing children, not overbearing, not quick-tempered, not given to drunkenness, not violent, not pursuing dishonest gain, being hospitable, and one who loves good. The husband of one wife, and both of them, then believing children, indicates to me that there is a domestic, something domestic here. So, does it then need to be a married guy? Or can it be a single guy? 2 weeks ago, we had a married man in was chosen, and there was also a single man that was pulled out of the group, and the two were in the lot. So when it came time to bless this family, when I'm getting ready to do the ordination, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to do this. If God chooses this single man, he doesn't have a family. He doesn't have children. So how am I going to do this? Well, I didn't have to worry about it because God chose the other man. But I didn't think about it when I did that as much as I'm looking at this, and it appears that I'm not saying that we have to do it, but it has to be that way, but it's obviously that these guys, First in Timothy and Paul and these guys, that they were thinking that it should be a man with a family. Now, in other parts, Paul says that a man who doesn't have a family can be more available to do ministry. I wonder what the difference is here. Does it matter, maybe, that the family man has maybe a little bit more of an understanding about the whole idea of management in a plural sense rather than the single guy? I would think that perhaps the single man could be an excellent leader, could be an excellent person in leadership, but may not have the qualities that it takes in plural management, such as a man in the church. And I'm not saying that a single man can't be a minister. He'd probably make good evangelists. He could travel and be gone and didn't have to worry about family and issues of the family and so on. But, and notice it talks about believing children. Husband of one wife, believing children. Now that can be a hang up here as well when it comes to the children. The idea there is, does every one of the children, do they have to be in the same church? Do they have to be in the church? This is something that gave me a struggle for quite a while. We have children that are not church people. In fact, we have two sons that don't go to church. They don't practice to be a Christian. They're not a Christian. I'm getting it said here. To me, that was a long time. That gave me a hard time. The devil really worked me over on that because I started to feel like, well, according to this, the quality and the qualification, where does that put me? Well, you see, if a child grows up, they all grow up in the same home, they're all taught the same, they are all given the same opportunity, they're not all going to do the same. We find that out very explicitly. They're not all going to be the same. I cannot take responsibility for my children who are old enough to make their own decisions. And I had to deal with that. I had to work through that. It wasn't easy, but I have a good relationship with the boys. We get along, and they know the situation. When they come to my house, they know what the rules are, and we get along fine on that. Okay, sober or vigilant is the idea of being sober, and then you have the word sober that shows up, which is talking about being sound in mind or self-control. You know, a leader needs to be self-controlled. It's difficult when you have a leader that loses it. You ever have that happen? I hope not, but I've seen it happen, and I've probably been part of that at times. It's not a good idea. So next one is good behavior, which has the idea of being orderly, or the Greek idea there is decorous. I'm trying to figure out where they get that idea from. Decorous was, to me, would mean that he needs to be decorated. Well, is that where the Catholics come up with? Maybe they decorate their priests and their popes, and in fact, a lot of some of the churches, Methodist, Presbyterian. I don't know if you've ever been in their services or not, but their leaders, when they stand before the group, they're decorated. I mean, they got gowns and stuff hanging on them, and they're very noticeable. I don't know if that's what that means or not. I don't think it does, but I'm not sure. Irrelevant in thought, anyhow. Given to hospitality. Let's do a little work here. The person that you think could be your new deacon, does that person fit the idea of hospitality? All right, let's do some reading now. Let's go on. it says here that in verse 2, he says, now this, of course, says if a bishop, that person should be given to hospitality. Now I'm going to flip over here to Titus. And see if I can find something here. I think it has the same, yeah. Verse 8, it says that that person should be a lover of hospitality. Now maybe I should have Duane stand up and tell us all about that, how that works. But before I move on, I want to say to you that my wife is a person that loves to have company. And that's been to my good. That has been to my favor. This woman I've married loves to entertain. In fact, she'll wear me out doing it. I would preach and then go home and to a house full of company. Well, you know what preachers like to do on Sunday afternoon, don't you? Well, it's not just preachers. I know some other folks like to do that same thing. You know, get in the recliner and kick it back and that's the end of it. But when you have a house full of company, that's kind of disrespectful, isn't it? That's not very hospitable. All right, and I appreciate that, really. I do. I don't mean to make light of it, because her goal was, when I was pastoring, her goal was that every family in the church would be in our house at least once a year. She kept track. She had a record. If you can't figure out where her motivations are, it's not my fault. She kept record of who was there, when they were there. And so at the end of the year, whoever had not been there, buddy, we tell you, we had company. We got it done. We get the job done. That's good. That is a very good gift toward the ministry. You see, that interaction that gives you with the church is extremely important for you to have them in your home. There's something about sitting at a table, not drinking wine. It says here, don't drink too much wine. But drinking coffee or milk or juice or something like that. Easy on the coffee too, because that can be hard on your stuff. So, but other things, you know. But there is something about sitting together at a table, interacting with company. And there's something good about that. All right, I'm going to read this for you. Not given to wine, no striker, not greedy, a filthy lucre, supposed to be patient, not a brawler, not covetous. Goes on down through there. Verse 7 says, verse 6, not a novice. You know what a novice is? Well, I'll help you in a little while. Lest being lifted up with pride, you fall into the condemnation of the devil. It happens. I've seen it. Moreover, he must have a good report of them which are without community. We'll talk about that a little bit later too, because I want to look at this verse 8. Verse 7. Good report of them that are without, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Verse 8. Likewise must the deacon be grave, not double-tongued. There's a reason why it's in there. There's a reason why these words are in here. They didn't just put them in here to take up room or for us to read them and think it's not so whatever. Not given to wine, much wine. Not given to much wine. So evidently a little bit is okay. Well, maybe. Not greedy of filthy lucre. There's a reason for that. Holding the mystery of the faith in the pure conscience, and let these also first be proved, and let them use the office of a deacon be found blameless. Verse 11. Even so must the wives. Oh, wow. We didn't like that one. Even so must the wives be what? Grave, not slandering, sober, faithful in all things. wonder, have you ever thought about why all that stuff's in there? I'm sure you have. Verse 12, let the deacon be the husband of one wife, ruling his children in their own houses well, and so on. I'm going to stop there. And let me think. Let me see. There's another place. Let's go to 1 Timothy 2. Yeah. 1 Timothy 2. And I'll probably need to read that chapter in order to get the context of what I want here. He said, chapter 2, verse 1, I exhort therefore that first of all, supplications, prayers, intercessions, giving thanks be made for all men. See what he's saying? You need to pray. For kings and for all that are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior, who will have all men to be saved and to come unto the knowledge of the truth. For there is one God and one mediator between God and man, the man, Christ Jesus, who gave himself a ransom for all to be testified in due time, whereunto I am ordained a preacher and an apostle. I speak the truth in Christ and lie not, a teacher of the Gentiles in faith and verity. I will therefore that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. I'll stop right there. In like manner. This is where I wanted to go. In like manner also. In like manner also. Now you see, we just read what men are, what they're supposed to be like, and what they're supposed to do, and how men are supposed to be. This is not talking about ordained men here necessarily. However, he's talking about men, you men in the church. Also, you women. So you see, now we're in the process of thinking about selecting one of you. Now, like I said this morning, it gets intense, doesn't it? Some people are trying to get, some people are wishing this was over with. I already know that. I mean, it's just a fact. Some of you are thinking, I wish this was over with. I wish this was done behind me. I know. But, and you ladies the same way. I understand. If you have family and your husband feels the call to this work, that affects you and so on. So it affects you no matter, it is that way. So verse 9 says, in like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broidered hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works. You notice he gives a whole list of things there in verse 9. And he says, he's not saying you can't dress up. You know, some people get this idea that because this is in here, you can't dress up, you can't look pretty, you can't fix your hair this way or that way, and you know, you can't wear this or that and what. But modesty is an important issue here. And as a leader's wife, modesty is even higher. It shouldn't be, but you're looked at. You ladies are looked at in that respect. You see, my wife and these wives of preachers' wives, Diane and Ruth, and Dwayne's spouse, can't say your name. Huh? Say it again. Karen. Oh, I knew that. You thought you were telling me something. Oh. But you see, you look at them differently than you look at the other women. There's Sister Ruth back here. She's been through this. And we can't forget that, because she has, it's not there anymore. We can't look at that differently. So anyhow, he's not saying that you can't braid your hair. But that's what some people would interpret that to be. It's just like verse 11, let the woman learn in silence. So in some cases, women are not allowed to speak, period. They're to be quiet. Well, that's not what it's saying. He says, learn in silence. Now I realize you as a female, a woman, should not be that boisterous and bold and arrogant to move ahead of your husband. And that's scriptural. Because he says in verse 12, I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. Now, he's not talking about that she can never say anything. You know, I tell ladies all the time that, and I'm saying this to you, that you do have a ministry. You're just not ordained. But you do have a ministry. You have, and you young ladies in youth group, there's ministry for you. You maybe never thought about it, but there's things for you to be doing in ministry. What, if you look up the word ministry, what do you find? You see, ministry is ministering to others. It can be exhortation, it can be encouragement, it can be smiling at someone can sometimes be a good ministry to do. Calling somebody on the phone and saying, hey, how are you doing? I was thinking about you. I thought about you today. I love that when someone does that to me. Call me up and say, hey, I just really thought about it. I was thinking, are you okay? And it's like, that. Then what does that do? You say, well, am I okay? So that's some of the things that we learn as we look at that. Beauty is of the woman, godliness, modesty, and shamefacedness, bashfulness. I don't know. Some have said that it's not talking about being bashful. But maybe some women should be more bashful. I don't know. So hospitality is extremely, extremely important. But now I also know cases where the husband would like for it to be, the wife can't quite get it done. You see, that's a problem. It really is. So I'll tell you up front, if your husband is called to this office, and you better get ready to be hospitable. If you haven't been, then you better need, you say that didn't sound right. You need to learn. Okay. You need to get it done. It's important. Okay. It's the idea of being fond of guests. You know, we're very selfish in our world today. I want to do my thing, and trust me. You know, this has nothing to do with being a deacon, but and nothing to do with being a preacher, actually. But, you know, I got this, we bought this fix-up thing that we do this all the time. My wife talks me into buying stuff, and then I have to fix it up. So the weather this summer has been really bad. No, it's been really good. Well, which is it? I don't know. It's been bad for me because I haven't been able to go to the lake. You like to go to the lake? I do. I like to take my boat out. Well, the weather always gets nice on Sundays or when I'm scheduled to be somewhere. And I go home, then it rains all week. And I'm not taking my boat that I just remodeled out to the lake and get it all wet. Oh, that don't make sense either. But, so the complicated here is that we're on our way up here this morning, and I looked at her and I said, isn't it a gorgeous day? Yeah. She knew what I was thinking. It's a day, it would be a beautiful day to go to the lake. But we're going to Shiloh. Folks, it happens. If you're a minister and you're in ministry, you have to recognize your priorities. You see, I would not have enjoyed myself going to the lake today. I wouldn't. If I would have said, Jerry, I can't come, I got fishing to do, or I got lake work to do, you know, I got a calling, a passion, I need to go. I wouldn't tell him what I'm doing, but then he finds out what I'm doing. My conscience wouldn't let me do that. It just wouldn't work. I'd rather have a clear conscience about things and just let the Lord work it out. Now, he's going to give me some days. One of these days, I believe he's going to give me a nice day. I believe. Well, he gives me a nice day every day, but I like sunshine for that kind of work. For that kind of ministry, that I prefer that. The person needs to be at least have somewhat an ability to teach. I don't know if I qualify for that or not, but it's too late if I don't. But apt to teach is a person that's instructive. And I also say that a person, a leader, cannot be a leader until they learn to follow. Now, I know that sounds counterproductive, but I believe it's true. I honestly believe that. And by that, I'm saying that a leader has to be humble. Sometimes others are right, and you're wrong. It's not good. But you have to be a good listener. Active listening, and I'm going to explain that. Learn to listen. Guess what? Some of us just aren't very good listeners. I have some friends that are not very good listeners. So what I do when I'm around them, I exercise my skills in listening because I went to school for that. I did. I honestly did. I didn't get a big degree in it, but there is a class called active listening. And in my work as a chaplain, we were required to do a lot of listening. We really did. And when I took the training as a negotiator, you better learn to listen. I mean, that was bottom line. If you didn't learn to listen, you were in trouble. And active listening has, there's skills that are connected to that. And what we call active listening is that when you are listening to somebody, do they know you're listening? Or do they go home and say, that person never heard a word I said? There's a difference. You might sit there and never say anything, and you may act like you're listening, and but do you ever make eye contact? Do you ever say, yeah, really? Or, oops, some of the little nuggets that go into that. One of the things I do, and I'm counseling, if I'm counseling somebody, and they're really tore up, I mean, it happens. And a deacon will surely experience that, no doubt. One of the things that in active listening that we learn is that, and if you sit there taking notes, you're not listening. See, that's another thing. You can't listen and write everything down. So another class that we took was you had to counsel somebody for an hour, dismiss them, and sit down and write out everything you just did. Well, guess what? You'd never get it right. I mean, you just made it up half the time. So the instructors, every time I did that, I'd make it up. I'd just write down what I thought we did. So I went back to class, the instructor would read that, and he'd say, well, you didn't do that. And I'd think, well, how in the world did he know? He's right. I made it up. And he knew it. Every time I get caught, and I'd have to start over. Well, it was a good lesson to learn. However, what it does, it's not the fact that you get it right every time. It's a fact that you learn to listen more carefully. And what I do, and I'm not planning on counseling anybody here. You got enough counselors here. I don't need to be involved in that. Okay? Let's get that straight. I'm not available. Okay. But if I did, and I was counseling you, I would listen to you, and I would let you get past some real hot stuff that you just told me. I mean, something that really made you angry and upset you and really, really pushed your buttons. I'd let you get on past that and way off down. And then I would plug in somewhere in that conversation and I'd catch a little statement and I'd hold that in my mind. Now, bad part is, see, I'm telling you this now, if I ever do, you'll think, well, you're going to do that to me. Well, along the way, when they stop to get a breath, that's when you jump in. And you take them back to that statement they just made. And when you do that, they know that you were listening. Then they know that you heard what they said. You didn't hear it all. But the fact that you picked up where they were back in there and you were able to take them back to that point in their conversation or what they were saying and bring them up to it. And it works every time. So a good listener. Someone said this, a good counselor is a good listener. And I've learned, I've worked with people in PhDs. I don't have a PhD. Best I can do is post hole digger, and that I don't even like that. Because it's too much work. It's sweat. It makes you sweat. But I work with a lot of PhD people, and I was in a lot of classes where PhD people were teaching, and men of character, men of quality, and they would tell you it's not what you know. You can have all the degrees that you want. It's not how much you know. It's not that at all. It's how well you listen. And I will tell you, anybody can be a counselor if you can learn to listen. Because it invariably will help people work through their problems. If I come to you and I'm all upset, and you let me unload, and you listen to me, and you hear what I'm saying, I'm going to go home feeling pretty good about it. It just works that way. And I'll find my own answers in the process. Well, so much for instructive, teaching, and so on. Now, he says, not given to wine. Now, Titus says, not given to much wine or not given to drunkenness. Now, we know that alcohol is a problem. We know that, don't we? I mean, that's period. By the way, BMA, Alliance, Biblical Mennonite Alliance, we take a stand on, what's the word I want? Abstain. Abstinence. Yeah. Thank you. We abstain from that. But you see, the problem here is they did drink wine. Now what are you going to do? These guys did drink wine. Now people want to argue about, well, it wasn't fermented. Or it wasn't, well, it was wine. If wine is wine, wine is wine. End of discussion. And if you drink too much, it'll make you drunk. Right? But you don't know. Or maybe you do know. Sorry. You walked into that one. He's not even embarrassed. He's pretty strong. He's your new deacon right there. What happens when people have too much alcohol? You ever been around them? I know you have. What are they like? Yeah. Argue. They want to argue with everything you do. I mean, they're just argumentative. They're just crazy. Now, since we take abstinence approach on alcohol, which we should, but here's the problem. And this is a question I brought up to our executive people. I said, and we got some, we got some people in our boards that, they know quite a bit. At least they think they do. And so I said, well, how about, I didn't mean that. How about if you drink too much NyQuil? What are you going to do about that? Huh? I know people drink NyQuil to go to sleep at night. What's in NyQuil to make you? Oh. Y'all didn't see that. That's okay. Y'all just look over here. There's cough syrup. Some of it's got 40% alcohol in it. You ever read it? You drink enough of it, it'll help you out. I mean, well, depends. It might put you to, it may help you out. But it might make you argumentative, too. You see, the whole idea there, to me, is the thing. I don't think you should drink wine, at least not much. I have to be careful here, I'll get in trouble. You might, anyhow, abstinence is the best way, guys, men, women, best way. But the idea there is there's so much of the time they want to argue. You don't have to be drunk to argue, you see. I'm right, you're wrong, so on. And the next one is striking, no striker, or quarrelsome. And I put down always right. You know, there are people in leadership that are always right. Doesn't matter what, they're always right. It's not true. We leaders are not always right. It's just not that way. Deacons are not always right. It just doesn't work that way. And we have to be able to be open to the fact that others have ideas, they share, and if you don't allow for that, of course, deacons usually don't get into some of this, but they do some. We'll get into some of that in a little bit. So quarrelsome, being always right, which is dictatorship. Just recently I was talking to a person who, family member that joined up with a cult type organization where the pastor does all the interpreting. If a lay person wants to read the Bible, they daren't read it. They have to go to the pastor, and the pastor explains it and reads it to them. Sounds kind of dictatorship to me. I don't know too much about that, but there are those that are out there. Your cults that are, they're out there, and we're not talking about that. But it's some people are like that. Okay, next one is not a lover of money. Titus, let's see, where did I have it here? Not pursuing dishonest gain. Now, next, you see, wherever, depending where you are, the duties of a deacon change. It's not always the same. So, for me to stand up here and tell you, the deacon does this, and he does this, and he does this. I don't have that authority. I don't. That is up to you as a church and to your leaders here. It's up to them. However, it appears, according to this, that they did a lot of things such as handling temporal affairs of the church. Obviously, that was done. Acts 6, we read that this morning, where they were to take care of the widows. That's a crucial thing. Another place talks about the widows, the orphans, the fatherless. Those people need to have high priority in our groups. I'm serious about that. I mean that with all my heart. Now, in Bible times, they were entrusted with the funds of the church. And it appears that because of that, they handled a lot of money. And that became part of the qualification, not a lover of the money, or not pursuing dishonest gain. Now, all of that has to do with handling money, money management. Now, in some cases, I think you do it here. You handle the money here, don't you? See? Must be something, right? They let you handle all the money. But he's saying that person should not be, and if you look around, you can soon tell the person that you must choose. You know, now I don't want you to next week go over this list and say, well, now let's see, Joe, he's blameless, and he's got one wife, and let's see, he behaves fairly good. Yeah, but his wife has not got hospitality like she should. See, you go down the list like that. I don't know if you should do that. But I will say this, that the wife can disqualify the candidate. Keep in mind that when you give a name, does the wife support what you're trying to do? Does that really work? You got to work as a team. Now, I realize we men, we think we're in charge. We're only in charge if our wives let us be in charge. That's only how it works. And that works well when we understand all that. And so we have that problem that can happen. And obviously, there was problems in the Bible times churches where money perhaps was abused, misused, or whatever you call that. In fact, I think Judas was in charge of the money. And you see what happened to him. He became involved with perjury and giving away Christ, being disloyal to him, and got him crucified and all that. But you know what happened to him after it was all done and said? He had the money. And he said, I'll do this for 30 pieces of silver. Well, that, it's no wonder that they have this in here, is because there were those guys that did misuse the money. He's one of them. And of course, after it was all over, he went out and killed himself. And you know the story, very, very bad situation. So, needs to be a person that is not a lover of money. Greed. Greed is another one that comes into there. Not a brawler, needs to be peaceable. Covetous is also involved, being greedy, greed, and money, all of that. Now, greed can affect a person in other ways too. Selfishness, those kind of things, and so on. Managing his family well. So here's where I'm going to say that there is a distinctness about putting the family first. I am very guilty of not doing that in early years of our marriage. My wife can testify, and she will, and I would let her do that, to the fact that she sat at home alone many nights. Many weeks I was gone for revivals, doing evangelistic work, traveling. Children were small. We had aged parents. She would try to go and take care of her parents. I was off doing the Lord's work. That sounds good, doesn't it? Well, I tell you, it doesn't work. You know, the Lord's work is at home. The Lord's work is taking care of your family. And I tell every young minister, do not neglect your family. The church is secondary. You're not married to the church. You're married to your spouse, and you take care of her and him. That's where it starts. If that is in place, the rest will come to will be in place, and it will work. Managing his family well. Family first. A man of family. Obviously, these guys that wrote this must have thought that you should be married. I'm kind of getting that idea from where he's at. The kind of literature that he talked about. And Eli, in the Old Testament, is a classic example. A good priest. He was an excellent priest. But he didn't manage his son. Like he should have. And he ended up in disaster. Now, fortunately, I've managed to stay out of that area where he ended up at, but he really had a bad ending in his life because his sons were not managed right. Now, here again, it was obvious in the story, as you look at the story of Eli, it's too obvious that he openly neglected that. He knew they, and he would say, I just read that recently where it says, where he said, they came to him and said, your sons are bad. They're doing bad things. And he said, well, I've talked to them and it doesn't help. It doesn't do any good. But God had given him orders what to do, and he didn't follow that. And that's what got him in trouble. And ended up in a lot of problems. In that then, okay. Let me see if what I should be doing here. Okay, when it comes to the wife, a lot of the wives are, they find themselves, well, now that I'm a preacher's wife. You know, it's kind of like the children. I'm PK. That's one of the things that 2 weeks ago when we did that ordination of the children, that's something they worried about. They said, well, are we going to have friends? And I'm like, are you going to have friends? Well, I hope so. But they were worried about the fact that if they become, their daddy becomes a preacher, none of them will have any friends. I wonder where they got that from. That's not a good thing. Well, I called them the other day and I found out that they still have friends, and they were tickled about that. When it comes to you, the wife, responsibility, you see, it speaks to that about learning in silence, not teaching. Let me see if I can find it here. Okay, 3:11, that's the one. I think that's where it's at. Yeah, even so must their wives be grave, not slandering. They need to be sober and faithful in all things. Now, I'm going to pull that out, and we're going to look at it for just briefly. She has to be grave, which is worthy of respect. Kind of how, you know, that if I look at all the preacher's wives here, it's like, well, I don't see that that's not happening here. Okay, but that's something you want to think about in your selection process. What is she like? Does she talk too much? Not slandering. You know, I hate to, sometimes I don't even like to get into these type of debates. But we're not in a debate, are we? I'm in charge. Is that the way it is? This is not open for discussion right now. All right. But it happens. And I'll tell you, one of the worst things that happens is you ladies are very curious. I already know that because I'm married to one. And I also know that when you go to a meeting and you come home, what does she tell you? What is her question? First question, as soon as you get through the door. How was your meeting? What did they say? Well, what all did you talk about? Now, boys, I'm going to tell you. You've been through that, ain't you, son? See? You don't have to be a preacher to go through that. I know that lady's dad. Knew him well. In fact, he worked for me before he was married. I love that man. I surely do. Not slandering means the fact that there have been times that I've been to many church meetings. At my age, I've been through some church meetings. Some that weren't so well. Some that didn't go so good. Some that I wished never happened, but they did. And so you go home. And sometimes there are situations you have to deal with in leadership as a team that have to be kept right there. Now, that's tough on your wife. It is. You go home, she wants to know. All right, now here's the problem. If she can keep it there, it's okay. Oh, this is touchy. But if she cannot keep it there, then we have a problem. You know what happens? The trust goes away. We're not talking about, now slandering is when you say things about someone else that isn't true. Or you say bad things about their character, attacking their character. That's by law, that's slander, and you can go to court for that kind of stuff. I almost said you go to jail, but maybe not. But you can get in trouble with it anyhow. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about being able to keep things confidential. Now, one of the things that I practice, I don't do it as much as I used to because in pastoring a local church, this is more critical because, you see, the neighbor lady might need to know what's happening. So she calls the preacher's wife in regards to, I'd like to pray about this. Okay? It ain't a good idea. Well, this can cause marriage problems too. It can. It didn't for us, but it could have. I come home from a meeting and I say, honey, I cannot. And first thing, you know, well, what was the meeting? How was the meeting? I said, what did they say? What did you talk about? Well, if you say I don't remember, you're lying. So you can't do that. So you have to figure out another way through this. So what I would do, I'd say, honey, I'll have to tell you later. Now, and at times, you know, that if you're, I know how you ladies are, and it's going to be hard on you to hear that. He's not going to tell them, you know, he doesn't love me anymore. I'm safe. She hates it when I do this. And then she loves it too, so I don't know which it is. I remember one incident when I came home and I said, honey, I just can't share it with you right now. I just can't. I mean, it's going to have to wait. Now, here's the thing. Don't say you can never do it, because that's not true. Even in marriage counseling, there are times that you can say to your spouse, can we talk about this tomorrow morning? See, you're not denying access. You're just simply creating a little bit of space for buffer and time so that you can. But anyhow, in these cases, sometimes it takes weeks before you're allowed to move ahead. And the very next day, I told her that I just can't tell you right now. And the very next day, she got a phone call. And they wanted to know, and she said, well, I don't know a thing about it. And boy, was she tickled. She loved that. She just loved it, because she could just, there was no pressure. I don't know a thing about it. Now, you can say, well, I can't tell you. But the problem with that is that it's a temptation to say things that you shouldn't be saying. It's really bad, and it's critical when you ordain somebody, and within 30 days, you hear from the church that, we don't trust that man's wife. Oh, that's painful. It's not good. So ladies, you do have a responsibility in that area to not gossip. And this thing of, and it happens a lot. And ministers' wives, I'm telling you, these ladies could testify that. I know they could. And I thought about having all the ministers' wives come up here and testify tonight, but then I thought I wouldn't. I knew that we'd never get home tonight. So gossiping is absolutely forbidden. And so temperate, and that comes under the area of temperance and self-control. It's the idea. I tell you, the wife has a really big responsibility. She may think, well, I'm just, here again, I said this morning, you know, just a deacon. That needs to be stopped. Brother, you're not just a deacon. You know, there is a whole lot more qualifications given and said about deacons and bishops, or I would say overseers. There's so many words there that go into that. If I can find a bishop, elder, overseer, superintendent, manager, coordinator. You know, sometimes I use that title. I'm just a coordinator. See, I shouldn't say it like that. But you're not. It's a high and holy calling for all of you. And Brother Jerry, Brother Elwin, Brother Dwayne, you've been called. And it's a high calling. It's a holy calling. And we must not belittle that. And so what about the wife? I would say the same thing for the wife. She is called, as well as the man. And you need to, you know, this is another thing. If the man feels the call, the wife doesn't, there's a problem. I don't know if I said this morning or not, but I'm not in charge of this ordination. I'm a helper. But if I'm in charge of an ordination, I will not ordain a man who doesn't have a call. I will not ordain if his wife is not feeling the same. There has to be unified call, and there has to be a strong call, or I won't put that person in the position. It's been my experience that when this happens, when you do that, you're just asking for problems, and it doesn't work. It splits churches. It causes trouble. It causes marriage problems. It's tough enough to be in ministry without adding all these little nuggets that we don't need. Now, I've explained to you that some of the qualifications that are involved, and I tend, at times, we get a little bit too negative. We think, and we kind of come through like, boy, preaching, being a preacher is tough. It's a hard life. It's not. There are times that you won't sleep at night. There are times that you come home frustrated and you yell at your wife. And wife, you have to be careful how you receive that. You know, just don't take it seriously and all that. No, we don't do that. We're not supposed to do that. Not supposed to do that. Okay. Not saying we don't. But there are so many good things and good times about ministry and being a minister. There's so many blessings that outweigh all those other times. And, you know, if you do it long enough, it finally becomes kind of a way of life. It's kind of like, oh, well, you know, you do the best you can, and if you can't get it right, you do the next. You just try to do the next thing. I mean, it's just the way it is. It can be difficult, but it doesn't have to be. Pride gets in the way in a lot of young men who start out with this, and they're not humble enough. And so these are kind of some of the problems that are faced when people don't follow the rules. And so let's talk a little bit about deacon. What does a deacon do? Well, it depends. I grew up thinking that a deacon takes some money to the bank and reads scripture once in a while and makes sure that everybody's in line, perhaps get things straight, takes care of the widows, as scripture points out. And then I later learned that deacons do more than that. And so then now I learned that they do more than that. So it depends on how you assign, you know, in Bible times they handled money. And I know that there's deacons today that, and I think that's how you do it here. Your deacon handles all the finances. Is that correct? All the monies are through you. So, and I don't find a right or a wrong method in how it's done, as far as what deacons' responsibilities are. I don't find it. But I do think that as large as you are, there's probably plenty of work for a couple of deacons here. Plenty of work. Plenty to do. When you do everything that deacons are required to do, I mean, you look at the work that's to be done. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. And so how you get that done, I can't stand up here and say to you, well, A, B, C, this is how you do it. That's not my responsibility. And so I'm going to quit. I'm done. I'm finished. But the Lord bless you.